Hey guys, welcome back to the No Contact Club.
Happy Halloween!
Even though it's November 3rd, as we record.
It's still Halloween!
Yeah. You really like Halloween, hey?
Yeah, I do really like it. I like the spirit of it. I like the pumpkins, even though New Zealand doesn't have pumpkins.
We don't really decorate pumpkins.
And we don't really decorate
at all. Yeah,
Halloween either.
There's a couple of areas like around where we live that they decorate a little bit. For Halloween, well, a lot.
But it's not like the
Americans just do it next style level.
Halloween. Like Americans really get into it, and yeah. I just wish
be cool to experience it.
Yeah, when I went to New York last year, it was like it was pretty much around now, actually.
Yeah, it was November.
Yeah, but it was like the end of Halloween, so all the doorsteps would have like pumpkins.
Oh my god, that's so cool!
I just want
that
an American style Halloween without it being
without
America.
American politics.
Yeah, without the American politics involved.
So Portia and I on Halloween we hung out with one of the kids I look after and his dad, and we were gonna watch a scary movie, but he gets a little bit iffy with scary movies, so we were like, okay, well let's watch like an old scary movie that's kind of funny because it's old and crap. So
yeah,
we watched Scream.
When you suggested Scream, I was like, oh, I remember that being really scary.
Same.
And I was like, are you sure that he's gonna be able to watch this?
Like, I know, like, but it wasn't scary at all. It was hilarious.
It was honestly so funny. Like, it was so classic 90s.
Oh,
like
my God.
The scream mask.
Yeah.
And the acting.
Hairstyles and everything.
Yeah, it was.
It was fun, though.
It was heaps of fun to watch.
It makes
like,
me
really
want to watch a couple of other older ones. Like, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
It was a really good
and
one.
And also, I mean, don't watch these movies because they're terrible, but what is it?
Scary movie.
Scary
they're
movie.
They're so offensive now.
I know.
Like, I watch them now and I'm like, holy shit, that's so racist and transphobic and like everything bad.
All the isms.
Yeah, exactly. But at the time I was like, this is hilarious. This is like the height of comedy.
Yeah, I know. The height of what, like 12-year-old comedy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what have you been up to, Chloe?
Not much really. We're just kind of all waiting for the fucking US election to be over.
I know.
Because we're all like not sick of hearing about it. I know that's a really privileged thing to say, but just like anxious for what's going to happen regardless of who wins. Like, I'm scared for both sides.
I know
what's going to happen.
I'm not scared for both sides.
No, I mean like,
but, like scared
both outcomes.
For
I
both outcomes.
Said.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like
something.
So many, I've just seen so many people on Facebook and Instagram just being like, prepare for civil war. Like,
I know. And it's so intense. Like,
yeah, it's not good.
I know. Speaking of America, didn't one of our followers talk about moving?
Yeah, so she we've been messaging her on and off on Instagram. If you guys want to check us out, we're at the No Contact Club. But we had chatted with her a little bit. She was talking about how she was thinking about moving to like New Zealand or I think it was Australia as well with her girlfriend. And she actually just messaged us the other day saying that she has applied for school in New Zealand.
Yeah, so exciting.
In Wellington. So
come join us.
Yeah, come join the good side.
Expensive place to live. No, it's great. It's great. Compared to other places right now, I think it's probably one of the only places I would like to be.
Yeah, yeah.
With COVID and everything.
Wellington or
Oh, just
or
New Zealand in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, apparently there was like I can't think of what I'm trying to say, but there was, you know, how you can see trends with people Google searching stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently there's been a huge jump on, like,
oh my God, I bet
there New
has.
Zealand, like, moving to New Zealand.
Yeah.
Like, how much to move to New Zealand? Or...
I'm not surprised. I have a really good friend in Texas, and every time something bad happens over there, I'm like, come live with us, like, please.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So I wanted to bring up, and I know you wanted to bring up, read out a comment on Facebook.
Yeah, so it was on a Facebook support group for daughters of abusive mothers. And this girl, she's given me permission to talk about this comment that she made on here.
Mm.
I'm not going to name her or give any specifics that'll give it away who she is. But I just wanted to share this kind of interaction that she had with her sister.
Mm.
'Cause I just felt like it was like
really good.
Yeah. And I felt like she was just speaking for all of us. Like, I felt like she was just speaking my story. And I feel like so many other people will relate to what she's talking about. So it was her sister basically messaging her saying, like, why aren't you talking to our mum? And saying, like, you know, we don't get much time in this life, and and you should talk to her and make the most of it and just basically get over her abuse and all this stuff.
Same old.
I'm sure most of us have had experience with that.
Yeah.
And the way that she responded was so, like, empathetic and compassionate, but also to the point, and and, you know, not letting up with her boundaries as well, like, just so I wanted to talk about, like, what she said. She basically said, like, she understands where they're, where she's coming from, and saying that it's not about getting over grudges or anything like that. It's just not knowing how to have a relationship in the present. Like, it's not about holding on to what was said or what was done in the past. It's about the fact that, you know, spending time with this person isn't good for her mental health, and and, you know, they, she just has stuff to work through, and and she ended it saying, like, I appreciate that you're worried about me, I would love to spend more time with you. And I just felt like the way that she worded that and the way that she talked to her sister about it was so, like, I acknowledge that you feel this way, that's not how I feel, these are my boundaries still, I'd love to spend time with you though. Like, it, it was just so empathetic.
A good way to do it.
Just, I wish I could have been that smart when I was going no contact.
It's a traumatic thing to go through, so.
Yeah, so it's understandable. Some people like me won't won't respond as empathetically.
That's okay. So you have a busy week this week.
Oh my God, don't. I have to get my tonsils out on Thursday, so that's
not going to be fun.
Yeah. yeah, that I'm not looking forward to it, because I, pretty much every person that I've told that I'm getting my tonsils out to, they're like, oh, that's going to be really bad. Oh, that's going to be painful. Yay. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Why? And you also can tell our followers that you enrolled at uni.
You just told them for me.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I enrolled at university for next year.
To study what?
To study sociology and a little bit of philosophy and psychology.
Yeah.
As well.
It's exciting. Portia's been umming and ahhing over study for a while, so
yeah,
it was pretty cool. And she's like, I did it.
Yeah. It's like my mental illness can make me really impulsive.
Yeah.
And so I pretty much was just like,
I'm going to do this.
I'm just, fuck it. I'm doing it. I don't fucking care.
Yeah, literally, like,
just like an impulsive decision.
Yeah.
I don't know if signing up for 3 years of university on an impulsive.
You can always pull out. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a big deal.
Yeah. Shall we
get
started, guys?
Hey, while we are knowledgeable about this stuff because of our collective experiences, we aren't professionals. We research what we talk about, and our references are in the show notes. But please don't take anything we say as gospel. If you feel like you need support, you can reach out to us at thenocontactclub@gmail.com or see the links in the show notes. Thanks.
So, this week.
Yeah, there's something I think most people who are victims of narcissistic abuse, I think a lot of people will ask themselves this. And you probably gathered from the title of this episode, that question is, was it actually abuse? Or am I just overreacting? How about you talk now? Because I can't.
It's not an episode of the No Contact Club without you fumbling your words.
Literally. It's... yeah.
Okay, so yeah, you might be listening to this to try and sort of figure out if your parent was narcissistic, you know, or maybe there's someone in your life now who's narcissistic, a friend or partner, a boss, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and like when we think about that, like in regards to our disclaimer and every, like, we repeat it every single time, we're not professionals.
We can't diagnose you, and that's not, or anyone else, and that's not what this podcast is about either.
Yeah, but if you do recognize, you know, patterns within this, or recognize anything that we talk about within your own childhood or within yourself, I think it's definitely important to go and seek help from a professional. Because we are not definitely professionals.
No, we're not. And we're very open about that. And we don't want anyone to get the idea that we are trying to take the place of a professional. So, yeah, please, if you do, not just this, excuse me, not just this episode, but any episode, if it brings up something for you, please go talk to someone about it, because, yeah, that can be heavy. But
yeah, because we do like research, what, again, just repeating our disclaimer, we do research what we're talking about, and we do try and make sure that we're giving you a well-rounded set of information that you can kind of take with you. But yeah, it is important. Go to a medical professional.
Definitely. But yeah, so in terms of asking yourself, like, was I really abused? That question pops up so, so much, even with a physically abusive partner or someone who has been abused in like a really overt way. So an obvious way, as opposed to a covert sort of hidden way.
Yeah. Yeah. And when talking about narcissists again, see, again, why did we choose a podcast on narcissism when I can't say the fucking word? When we're talking about narcissistic abuse, commonly it's really hard for victims to identify or even label it as like abusive or toxic. Yeah. And it can be really confusing for the victim simply because of how detailed and ingrained that abuse is, you know, like the gaslighting and everything.
Yeah, like you don't even really realize how ingrained it is. And there's this massive hesitation that people, like I know I felt, in labeling your experience as abuse, because years and years and years of gaslighting that come with narcissistic abuse, totally, they just completely confuse you. And, you know, things like manipulation and gaslighting, it you believe in this warped way that you deserve the treatment, or that somehow it's your fault.
You know? It makes you feel as though you're the one who's toxic, or you know, you're the reason that the narcissist acts the way that they do, which is totally wrong. You don't control how other people act.
And it's not your fault. Yeah. So, I mean, that can happen with physical abuse as well. And in most abusive relationships, there usually is this sort of level of victim blaming where the victim feels like it's their own doing that's causing the abuse. You know, we've all heard stories of domestic violence and stuff where someone will say, oh, well, you know, it's my fault. I riled him up, or I, you know, I don't even know. But yeah, it's definitely common.
Yeah, and they can even go so far as to make the victim believe that it's not actually abuse at all. Like, you know, with us, like, I think it
definitely
it's always been a thing where it's like, how dare you label this thing as abuse, as what it is, you know, call a spade a spade.
Exactly. And I mean, for people with narcissistic parents or partners, it can take years and sometimes even longer than that for them to realize that something is or was not right.
Yeah, I mean, we've had like people email us saying like that they're in their late 50s
and they've 60, only just someone was like 64 65.
Yeah, and they've only just realized that, you know, it's abuse, or they're just coming to terms with it.
Yeah,
I mean, it took me 25 years.
Yeah. Was me, it 29?
Yeah. To actually go, oh, okay, like it wasn't actually.
That's not how mothers treat their children.
Yeah.
It's pretty, it's messed up. And I mean, there's no like
right or wrong time.
Yeah. It's like my therapist always says, like, it's you feel it when you're ready to feel it. So like we were ready to feel it, and somebody else might not be ready for that for a long time, and that's okay.
Yeah, let's just keep that as a blanket statement for this entire thing. Yeah. You feel it when you're ready to feel it.
It's we all have, this is so cliche, but we're all on our own journeys, you know, and nobody can force you into seeing that you've been abused in the same way that you can't force someone else to see it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Narcissists also, I think we should point out, they're super charming.
Yeah,
like they're really good at keeping up appearances and looking like this perfect, you know, mother or perfect partner or whatever. They show to the outside world this side of them that looks, you know, picture perfect.
Yeah.
Which makes it so difficult for you to then click and realize, oh, okay, the person that I see behind closed doors, this, you know, mean person or nasty, you know, whatever, that's the real them. And it's so hard for you to put those two together because it's like everybody else might be going, oh no, they're such so a nice. Good person.
Exactly, because they do put on this like false sort of narrative of this like angelic mother with her children or whatever. And so even if you tried to say, oh, actually, you know, mum's this, that, or the other thing, the chances of people believing you are so slim because people just see the good version, you know?
Yeah, and it's almost like the narcissist puts on that facade and believes it themselves.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so as well as that, when you grow up with a narcissistic parent, you can quite often end up later in your teenage years and sort of adulthood with issues like self-esteem problems, people-pleasing, self-destructive behavior. I know we both have a lot of those.
A lot.
all of which sort of adds fuel to this fire that leads you to believe that whatever terrible treatment you had was down to you and your behavior and not over to the narcissist.
Yeah, you're taught by your parents that you have these like inherent flaws that cause them to act the way that they do.
Yeah.
Like I can think of one example when our mum was trying to quit smoking and
Which time?
The multiple times. Mm. But that's not to say, I mean, God, I get it.
No, tell your story first.
I get that quitting smoking is hard I was a smoker for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, when she was trying to quit smoking for however many times, her and I would usually, or it's usually us, always end up in an argument. And then she'd go off and buy smokes and she'd blame me for her buying the cigarettes. And I'm like,
yeah. Also, every time she tried to quit, she would get to treat us like shit. Like, she'd always be like, the first 3 days are the worst. And she'd like yell and scream and be horrible. And it's like, sorry, girls, I'm just trying to quit smoking. It's like, that's not my fucking fault.
Sorry, girls, I'm just trying to quit smoking. So I'm using it as an excuse to be a shitty person.
Yeah.
In real
literally.
Life.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, she did that all the time. I just sort of remember that. But there are lots and lots of reasons why people don't realize that they live through abuse. And a really, really big one is like, it wasn't that bad. You know, there were good things about our childhood. We had good things about our childhood.
Yeah. It's like, totally that, like, it comes back almost to that idealization and devaluation thing we've talked about in previous episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the good following the bad, and you kind of, you get so hooked on those good things that it's easy to make excuses for the bad stuff.
Yeah.
So like we would have times where it would be payday and mum would go buy like, you know, something for a big dinner, or we'd go get a movie from the DVD shop showing our age and you know, have popcorn or something. And it's like, that was fun. And we genuinely had a nice time and watched a movie together and it was good. But like, that didn't change the fact that the next morning we didn't have any food for breakfast, or, you know, whatever.
It was. And it's the same also, I think, a lot of the time when you've just experienced emotional and mental abuse rather than experiencing physical abuse.
Yeah,
you
know,
I think that's a huge thing for me, is that because it wasn't physical, I still find it really fucking hard to actually acknowledge that what she did was abusive because there wasn't anything physical involved.
Excuse me. Yeah. I mean, we quite often it's very easy to compare to other people who have been abused sexually, physically, you know, it feels like there's a big difference. But at the end of the day, you weren't treated how you were supposed to be treated. Like, it's still abuse, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really easy to normalize abuse as well. Like, I think we've mentioned before, having no frame of reference. So, you know, you don't know that what you're experiencing is abnormal, air quotes, because you exist in this kind of vacuum where you can't see how other families live to know that how you're being treated isn't right. You know, we didn't tell anyone that shit was going on.
And yeah, we had the police at our house
and nobody knew.
We didn't tell anybody. Like, there were so many times where, you know, people would ask us and we'd be like, no, it's all fine.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think there was one time, it happened multiple times, but there was one time mum slapped me and I remember texting my friend about it. And the next day she like hugged me and then that was it. We never talked about it again. And I was like, okay, I probably shouldn't tell people about that. Like, it's not a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you kind of want to protect your parent. They're your parent. Like, they brought you into the world and they're looking after you, you know, air quotes.
And it's such a strong theme with toxic and abusive family dynamics that you all are secret keepers.
Yes.
You all keep these secrets.
Like I remember when we would go see our dad, and mum would say things like, don't tell your father this. Don't tell your father this. Make sure you don't talk about this. It was like a big, big secret. Not that she ever said, don't tell dad that I'm an alcoholic. It was more like, that was the unspoken one, you know? Like,
yeah.
Don't tell dad.
Yeah,
don't absolutely. Tell anyone. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that we normalized, like being hungry, how hungry we were all the time. Like payday, we would have a really nice big meal, like I said, and then be hungry for the rest of the week.
Mm. Having sugar sandwiches.
Oh my God, don't. So bad for our teeth. Or being sent to the shops to buy cigarettes for mum. Like she would call the shop owner, the dairy owner, and say, oh, Chloe's coming down and give me $20 and I would go and buy her smokes because she didn't want to go. Like,
I think also though, I think that's a really common thing back in the day, like back in the 90s, early 2000s, even before then. I think it was a super common thing for parents to be like, go and buy me some cigarettes from the shop.
And just to turn that on its head, Bridie and I, we went together once in the rain and she's like, oh, I remember my feet being so cold that they were just stinging like in the hot water when we got home. And do you remember we used to hide food, school food?
Yeah.
Because we were like, I want that for my school lunch this week before it's like ran out.
It was like the Hunger Games of our childhood.
It really was.
Battling for food.
I know.
Trauma.
So that's like normalizing kind of general abuse.
Yeah, but there's also the case of normalizing generational abuse.
Oh.
Like you think about aunts or uncles or grandparents, you know, if they all experienced the same or similar behavior, whether they were dishing out the treatment or whether they were experiencing it, you know, it becomes the norm within the entire family line. Like nobody really bats an eye because it's like they're all secret keepers. They're all wanting to keep the status quo.
That sort of thing of like, oh, that's just what such and such did. It was different in those days.
Yeah.
But no, it shouldn't be. Like that's a big deal. Mm. And children more often, but often adults as well, they don't have that capacity to process what they went through and see it as abuse. You know, you sort of protect yourself from it because it's easier to bury your head in the sand and think that everything was fine.
Yeah. I think it's this total thing of like, you dissociate from shitty things that have gone on in your childhood, like you or just even abuse in general, like people who have had abusive partners or whatever. It's like you dissociate from it.
Yeah,
and even in day-to-day life, if you remember it, it's like some people like me, I don't know if you do.
Sometimes.
Yeah, like dissociate where you're like,
not as much as you do.
Yeah.
like I remember you standing in my kitchen and saying, and I could see that you were not right. And I was like, you okay? And you're like, yeah, I'm just not really here. I was like, all right, I'll keep cooking then. So I don't get it like that level. It's more like I'll do it like when I'm driving, I'll forget the drive sort of thing.
But I think that's a huge one, is dissociating so you don't have to deal with the shitty feelings. But
also love.
Yeah, like that feeling of, I love my mum, so how can I possibly love someone if they're abusive? Like that can't.
Yeah. I wouldn't love someone who's an abuser. So they can't be an abuser. Logic.
Yeah. That's one of the ways they keep you roped in, you know, as a child, you don't know any better.
Exactly. You know that your mum and your dad, and they brought you into this world and they're supposed to treat you however you experience, you know, being treated. And that's normal for you sort of thing. And that was a big one for us. Like mum loves us. She doesn't abuse us. Like,
yeah.
And I know other siblings feel similar way, like, you know, that they love her so much that they're like, no, there's no possible way that she abused us, you know.
It's like they can't see that those two things can exist
exactly
together,
exactly,
and separately.
Exactly. Like you can love someone because of your shared like experiences, and a mother and child, like obviously that's such a intertwined relationship, but you can also take a step back and be like, okay, I love you and you love me, but look at these shitty things that you've done, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's kind of like when you start to realize that your childhood wasn't normal. or realize that things weren't right. It's like the switch goes off, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And coming to terms with the fact that you were abused, whether it's physical, emotional, sexual, you know, whatever it is, it's very much like going through the grief process. So, you know, being angry, accepting it, relief, self-acceptance, all that sort of stuff. And it takes years and years to get through it and process it. A lot of work, a lot of therapy, and we're not painting a very good picture of it right now. But yeah, it's a big thing. It's a traumatic thing in itself. And coming to terms with that is like, it's really, really hard. You know, you start looking at every event or interaction and you see it from a different light, like our examples earlier, because as a child, you kind of switch off your emotions and all of a sudden they come at you when you finally, sorry. And then you finally face them head on and it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that? You said to me like something about a frog.
Oh yeah. The boiling frog metaphor. So it's, if a frog is put in a pot of boiling water, he'll jump out straight away. But if you put him in room temperature water that's slowly heated across like an hour or two, he'll just boil alive. So it's like you adjust to it. So and with respect to a situation like this, like you kind of adjust to the abuse and tolerate it as it increases.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting term that you bring up with tolerating behavior. So
yeah.
Katie, my friend, she always says to me, she had said to me a couple of times where in regards to an ex that I had and some mm-hmm. things that he would say, and she goes, he is I can't remember what word she used, but he's basically testing the water to see what you will tolerate later in life.
Yeah.
So it's like they slowly start increasing the type of abuse or the scale of it. And as you tolerate more and more, you see become
what they get away with.
They're just seeing what they can get away with.
And as a child growing up with a parent in that situation, you tolerate it because you've been conditioned to do so, you know. And it's not until that switch goes off that you start to see the whole reality with the situation. Because I know when we talked about codependency, you know, I never realized that that was harmful behavior. And I felt special that I got to do stuff with mum, and it didn't occur to me that I was getting a nice dinner out and the girls were at home eating dry toast, or like we had no money for food, but mum would be like, yeah, let's dye your hair because, you know, your dad's coming and we want to make you look cool, or you're going to see your cousin this week and I want you to look cool. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like when that switch goes off and you're like, oh, okay, this wasn't right. That's when the question, was it really abuse, comes up. You know, it's this line that you end up asking yourself over and over. And I still do to this day.
100%, I do as well.
But, you know, if you're – I'm going to go into like preachy Porsche mode. But it's like if you're asking yourself that question, I really want you to think about a close friend of yours or maybe a partner, maybe a sibling. Probably everybody knows where I'm going with this right now. But think about if they were telling you what happened to them, you know, the story, that their story was the same as yours, except now it's happening to someone who isn't you, but someone who you care about. You know, would you sit there and tell them it was okay, or would you call it what it was, you know, toxic and abusive and wrong and fucking damaging?
Yeah, exactly. And then if you think about yourself as a child and picture what you look like when you were 5 or 10 or 15, you know, what were you like? Would you say to that small version of you, you know, would you say, hey, it's okay, like that happens to everyone? Or would you comfort them and be like, yeah, that's fucked up. Maybe you wouldn't swear. It was wrong and that treatment was abusive, you know, that adults don't treat children that way and they shouldn't treat people that way.
And, you know, would you treat your friends and family the same way that your parents treated you? Like if you have children, could you ever imagine yourself doing the things to your child that your narcissistic parent did to you? Like, we all know what the answer will be with this.
Exactly, yeah. And at the end of the day, it's not really down to us or anyone else to stipulate whether or not something was abusive. It's up to you to come to terms with that fact and, you know, choose how you move forward from that.
Yeah. I mean, like we were saying earlier, not everybody is at that place where they are ready to accept that their childhood was abusive.
Yeah.
So even if you're not ready to accept the fact that it was abuse, you know, the fact still remains that you have been left traumatized and the way you've been treated hasn't resulted in anything good. You know, you can't continue to deny yourself the acceptance of your trauma. It's not doing anyone any good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, the only person it's doing any good for is your abuser. Like, that fear you still have and the gaslighting you do to diminish your trauma just maintains that status quo of the abuser continuing to hold that power over you.
Yeah, and like I said before, like, I really don't want us to sound like we're, you know, preaching, being like, you have to accept your trauma or else, in a witchy voice.
It is Halloween.
Yeah. Accepting that you had a traumatic or abusive childhood, it's not easy. Like Chloe said, it's traumatic in itself. So, you know, there's no right or wrong way to go about this. You can't force yourself to accept it, you know?
Exactly. And I sort of wanted to talk about this thing called intellectualizing your childhood, which I think you found, Push.
Yeah.
But basically it's like acknowledging that your childhood was rough or hard or maybe a bit difficult, but you sort of remove yourself from actually sympathizing with both your childhood self and even your present self for having experienced hardship. You know, it's easy to be like, yeah, yeah, my childhood was hard, but it's harder to be really truly moved by how painful it was or maybe how frightened you might have been as a kid. And I know, like, we do this all the time.
Yeah, it's like our go-to.
Yeah, and sometimes I will sort of see how I've responded to something and be like, oh, that's because of XYZ from when I was a kid. And Ellen or someone will be like, oh man, that sucks, I'm sorry. And I'm like, it's okay. Like, that's my, it's all right, don't worry. Like, anytime someone is like, oh, that sucks, you have a shitty childhood. Like, I went to go see an acupuncture person, lady, and she's lovely. And she was talking about maybe traumatic things that might have happened in the last couple of years. And I was like, well, actually, I went no contact with my mom. She's like, wow, that's really hard. Like, that must have been really hard for you. I'm like, it's fine. Like, I'm not getting into it now.
Yeah, it's kind of... like, I know I've said it a couple of times, but it was like when I told my colleague ages ago about my mom and then she started crying. And yeah. I'm like, I was so, and still am today, like you get so removed from yeah. actually, you know, feeling how shitty it was that you're just yeah. like, it's fine. I'm just traumatized.
And it's right that if someone came to me and told me any of these things had happened to them, like, I would be sad. If Ellen came to me and said these things happened to me, I would be so sad for them and upset and hurt. But like, it's so hard turning those emotions like on yourself and feel, yeah. I mean, yeah. and it's scary. Like, that hurts.
Yeah, it's like
acknowledge something like that, big like that, and be like, actually, that hurt me in these ways, and you know, I that shouldn't have happened to me. You know.
Yeah, and it's like this whole thing of, you know, we shut off our emotions, yeah. and I know that both of us are guilty of this. We shut ourselves off from like truly feeling our emotions, and you know, we spend more time doing what we did in childhood, which is holding ourselves together and protecting ourselves from anything that might be uncomfortable or not feel good.
Yeah, and that sort of shutting off of emotions and sort of soldiering ahead is really damaging, because it can damage your relationships. It can sort of lead to you not knowing who you are. You know, you sort of repress those parts of you, and it's really easy to sort of blow up because you've repressed stuff, you know, like
yeah.
it's like the whole thing we tell kids, like, you don't bottle stuff up. You talk about stuff when you're feeling sad. And yet as adults, like, we don't do that exact thing.
Yeah. It's entirely rational to, you know, want to avoid painful memories mm. or feelings that aren't great or feelings that are uncomfortable or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But there's also this other side of it where it's like, think about you as a child and the strength that it took for you to survive this shitty, toxic,
yeah. Yeah.
abusive childhood, and the strength that it has taken you to go into adulthood and survive all of the aftermath of that. It's mm-hmm. like, you know,
and just normal life stuff on top of that, like relationships and work and study and everything.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. But you got through that shit in childhood. And as an adult, you're now in this, well, if you're no contact with your abuser, if you're still in contact with your abuser, then obviously.
Yeah, or even just beginning to do the work.
Yeah, but that strength that you had in childhood, that's not gone anywhere.
No,
like,
exactly.
To be able to survive something like that is really, like, brave?
Yeah. Is it? It is brave, yeah. And you know, you were kind of, or we were, I guess we should stay and address ourselves. But, you know, you're kind of forced to be strong and to survive when you didn't really have a choice. Like, as kids, none of us had a choice. It was like, this is your life and you've got to figure it out and move forward whatever way you know how. So now, as adults, you know, we're all kind of sitting here like, oh, actually, that stuff shouldn't have happened to me. I was a kid. I didn't need to survive. I just needed to be looked after, you know. So it takes a lot to sort of like walk through all that and figure out what happened to you and how you feel about it now and how it's affected you. And it's really, really big. So you've really got to practice self-care and look after yourselves.
Self-care. Yeah. Self-care. And like we always fucking say every single episode. Yeah. Therapy. Yeah. And I think just give yourself time as well. Like it's like, I know that when I was realizing that, you know, our childhood was abusive or whatever, like when we were going through that, it was like every single day we were talking about it.
I know. And you would come over and be like, remember this, remember that. And it would be like memories were unlocking, or we would just be looking at stuff in a different way. We were just talking about it constantly.
Yeah. And it was just like a bombardment. I know.
It was so overwhelming.
Yeah, it really was. And that's why I think, like, looking at it, what do you say, in hindsight?
Yeah.
Give yourself time. and
don't rush it.
Yeah, if you feel overwhelmed with memories or like the realization that, you know, you had a toxic family or whatever, just try, you know, give yourself a break. Watch something easy on TV, go for a walk.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe talk with someone, like support people that you've got around you that are trusted and stuff, and therapy, like we said. It takes time. Like, unfortunately, you know, there's no overnight fix of like, oh, I'm going to do this speedy online therapy session and I'll be fine. Like,
which actually, I just want to point out here, talking about like a speedy online fix.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. So,
Mum reached out to Bridie, right? Yeah. She said that she was going to do a 3-day therapy course or something, like
self-help course or something. Yeah.
And we were like, cool, but like, what about the years of therapy that you need?
Yeah. So
it's
just
too late.
just letting you guys know. I mean, well, I don't know. I was going to say quick fixes don't work. Generally they don't. If it's too good to be true, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah. This stuff takes a long time.
Yeah. You're undoing like
literal years of trauma.
Generations.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, yeah, if you know, it goes back generation by generation, that's like hundreds of years of crap. And you're the one, like, that's actually really powerful, though. I think we've said that before. But you're the one who's putting a stop to it. Like,
the fuckery stops here.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, just take it slow. It can be overwhelming. So,
yeah, you have to kind of tread carefully.
Definitely.
And just therapy. This is our ASMR channel. You guys need to go to fucking therapy. Please.
Anyway,
can you tell that we're having fun with our new microphone?
I know. Anyway, so thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
We really appreciate it. We will hopefully be back next week. We're going to play it by ear with Portia's tonsils, but she thinks she'll be fine. So
I think we're going to try and record tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But by the time you guys are hearing this today, when we're releasing it, because it's Tuesday, will the... No, so tomorrow, good luck for the election is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, stay safe.
Please look after yourselves.
Yeah, stay inside, away from crazy white supremacists.
Yeah, please be safe. Wear a mask if you have to go out.
Yeah, and vote that motherfucker out.
Please.
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, at the No Contact Club.
You can email us at thenocontactclub@gmail.com, and I think that's all of our socials.
That is all of our socials. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys.
Stay classy.